Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. I'm John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Before we get to our interview, if you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.24 for our 2024 fundraising campaign. Visit the Film Florida merchandise page at filmflorida.creator-spring.com to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and more. All merchandise proceeds go to the Film Florida Filmmaker Grant and Scholarship Fund. Amy Pascal is an award-winning visual effects artist with credits on some amazing projects, including The Lion King, Suicide Squad, The Legend of Tarzan, The Jungle Book, Maleficent, Rescue Me, and Boardwalk Empire, just to name a few. We talked to Amy about the evolution of visual effects, her career, her newest venture as owner and CEO of New Wave Color, and more on this episode of the Film Florida podcast. Here's my conversation with Amy Pascal. Welcome to the Film Florida podcast, Amy.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you.
So let's start at the beginning. Give us your backstory.
Okay, so right now I'm in Miami. This is a full circle. So I'm born in Miami and South Miami. We moved up to New Jersey when I was about five, but this is my roots. I've always had friends and family and grandmother and everything. So Miami is still pretty much home, but grew up in New Jersey. And then, as you naturally do, go work in New York. But I came back to University of Florida. That was where it was like comfortable. I knew a lot of people and it was just a Big Ten school. My dad said, choose Big Ten. So I did. And I found the art program there. I started off as painting there. And then I realized that I needed to start learning a bit more digital. So I started getting into that. And then I started moving out to New York and looking for jobs there.
Well, and you mentioned a little bit there, I think, of the beginning of this. How did you first get involved with visual effects and what made the storytelling medium kind of pull you?
So I was always interested in painting. I used to do a lot of paintings for friends as gifts, as a way to say thank you. I've had a couple mentors along the way, and I would kind of gather their stories, things that they loved, and I would create a painting for them. So I knew that when I went to University of Florida that I had to find my way within that. I had to find some sort of art there. But I also knew that I had to make money. In 2003, it wasn't the most lucrative way to go with painting and trying to make money there. So I knew that I had to start learning the graphics. And that's what it was back then. It was graphics. It was Adobe After Effects. It was Premiere. It was editing. It was Photoshop. And so I didn't love it, but I thought, I got to know this. So I started to do things like that and use just artistic skills to get myself involved and eventually a job. And then afterwards, somebody gave me a job, of all things, designing underwear. And I started doing that I started moving up to do it for Victoria's Secret. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? This is like, I'm designing, I'm drawing. But I was learning Photoshop and Illustrator. And I was creating images and designs. And then somebody gave me the Lord of the Rings books. I read them all, fine. But then the movies came out. And having read the books and felt it all and envisioned things, and then to see on the big screen what they actually did with it, it was like, whoa, hold the phone. What is this? And that was it right there. That was my moment in the theater. How do I do this? And at the time I was in New York, I didn't know anything about what they were learning in Europe. In London, the Harry Potter films were going on at the same time. And I started watching those with the sound off because I knew the story was so complicated. I'd already read Lord of the Rings. I had enough fantasy. I just wanted to see what they were doing. And what they were doing in London was also incredible. The effects they were creating, the environments they were creating, I had to find a way. So I started researching matte painting. They didn't have it in New York. What they had were flame ups and color studios. So I said, fine, I'll try that. That was also big money at the time. You can make something like $800 to $900 a day, which was attractive. So I said, I'm going to learn this. And I started off as a night shift at a company called Rhino Effects. And this was so hard. I mean, you had to start off as a night shift because you had to work your way to become a senior flame op to work during the day, where you had clients sitting in the back paying very expensive prices to watch you work and deliver the best product you could possibly, because time's ticking and the money's going. So the pressure was very intense. It was very technical. And I would go to work at 8 o'clock at night in New York and come home at 4 or 5 in the morning, having had to finish something for the senior artist to present the next day. That was a mess. I had to stop that because it wasn't artful enough. What were we creating was a little sliver of something here, a little mountain here, some color correct. I was doing a lot of beauty work, which was very cool, but where was the Lord of the Rings? So I knew I had to keep going. So I decided to get as many matte painting jobs as I could find in New York. I started contacting all these companies. Oh, we have the slightest project. We have one shot. We need a background. Can you do it? Yes, I can. You're only going to work for 2 days. Fine. So I starved a little bit, but I created this portfolio that got me into Nomen. I went over to Nomen, LA. I picked up 2 suitcases from New York and I went over there with no job. I think I had a place to live. I'm not sure. And I worked my way in there. I worked at the front desk so that I could have access to the class and all the videos, which had Dylan Cole and Robert Stromberg and all the attractive best in the world matte painting videos. And I just sat and watched those all the time. And that was my way that I got there. I mean, it continues on from there, but I'm sure.
Yeah. And which we'll get to. But I mean, so like you started talking a little bit about some software and you dropped a couple of technical things in there. Talk about, you know, you've seen the technology evolve in the last 20 plus years. People like will start at kind of the beginning if they want to get involved. Where should they start from a software standpoint in terms of learning things, kind of the basics?
Basics is before you even get into software, you have to know your color, composition, depth cues, light direction, all of these things, and train your eye and look at actual art. So this is the first thing. If you don't have that, none of the software is going to really work for you. So I'm sure if you're looking to be a matte painter, you're going to read that time and time again. So I just wanted to blanket that and say that first. Mm-hmm. Then you get into Photoshop, of course, because that's where you're photo bashing, right? And you're putting things together. You have to bring in your plate, which you need Nuke for. So Nuke is your second best friend. You bring in your plate, you get all your overscan and you kick it out to Photoshop and you start your large matte painting from there. You bring it back into Nuke. That's your 2.5D projection workflow. So these two are your absolute musts. When you're getting into more 3D matte painting, you're going to need Maya, of course. But these are also a bit old school. I think with the large elephant in the room, I'll say it, Unreal. I think some of this stuff might go away, mm-hmm. but not yet. I don't think companies are ready yet. They're getting ready. So have it on your radar. Download it. Be with it. Know it. And soak it in. But also you need to know your basic pipeline in case companies aren't ready. So you've got Maya, you've got Blender, which is where you're working with your models and you're texturing at the same time. You've got Mari, which is also texturing. I don't know how many people are using Mari, but that's where I started. I think there are better painting 3D texture programs out there. Gaia is another one, which is more like a world building, and you can do lots of nice topography that you can then bring into Houdini, or you can just use for projections as well. It depends on how high res you need your projection geo to be. If you don't need it, if you need a basic projection geo, you can do it in Nuke or Maya and just toss it in and project on that. But if you really need high res geo, you're going to need to learn to model a bit more. And if you're going into environments, Houdini is also very good for scattering. You could do scatter tools in Maya, but Houdini is much better if you have a TD to make it.
You talked about how you started in kind of the traditional art form of drawing and painting. How important was that, or was it at all, to have that as kind of your baseline before you went into the visual effects kind of things?
It's funny because unless you're a concept artist, you're not really drawing that much in matte painting. Matte painting has a lot to do with photos and plates mm-hmm. and references, things that the supervisors bring back from shoots, either on set or when they go on location and bring back reference photos if you're lucky. So you don't draw that much. However, drawing gave me the basis of composition and light and form. Also with studying art in general, you know, how are you really composing the weight of a shot? If it's too heavy on the right side, it's going to look off. It's going to look imbalanced. If you're using too many images or it's too busy, you know, where do you soften it out? Where do you remove, create negative space, create positive space, make certain things pop out just using color or just using shading, switch the lighting around. If you're on a hill and it's coming from your left and it's too strong, you know, maybe your eye is going in the wrong way. Focal points. I mean, these are all things that you learn when you're drawing and painting. So if you don't have that, you're not going to be able to look at a shot and figure out what's wrong with it, because that's what visual effects is. And that's what we're constantly doing. We're constantly looking at shots and figuring out why does this not work, more so than we figure out why it does work. Mm-hmm. Every supervisor and director and artist is coming in and looking at it fresh eyes. They're trying to figure out what's wrong with it. And your job as a matte painter is to say, I know exactly what's wrong with it. It's because of this, you know, right. And that comes from painting and drawing.
Well, you've used the term digital matte painter, and it occurred to me that maybe somebody listening doesn't know exactly what that is. So give us a kind of a brief explanation, a definition of what a digital matte painter does.
So every matte painting department builds it in different ways. They either blend it with 3D or they separate 3D, and they have a separate environments department or strictly matte painting department. I think it's a lot more blended now. But when I started, we know that it used to be paintings on glass and all of this. But what it was when in 2003, probably till about, I don't know, 2019, something like this, maybe earlier, was that you get plates, you get shots that you need to remove green screen or you need to replace the background entirely. It's from the middle of the shot backwards that you're really focus on as a matte painter. How do I create this seamless environment back there? What you're doing is you're referencing real life lighting, real life environments. You have to find references that have the same lighting as your shot so that you can replicate it. You are a realist painter digitally. You're not redesigning light. You're not redesigning what things look like in the real world. You're not making stuff up. You are trying to make it exactly as it should look to a human. And that's the biggest part that you always have to remember, because people want to get creative with it, but no, it has to be absolutely perfect.
And Amy, you're credited as the digital matte painter in a number of different projects, but specifically, you know, Suicide Squad, Alien Covenant, The Jungle Book, and others. But like, pick a scene in there or two that people might be familiar with and just kind of explain what you did and what part you had in some of those films.
The best one was Alien Covenant. This was probably the most exciting project that we got in. We had a whole sequence come in that was a bit last minute. Ridley Scott had decided, we had planned for it. We got lots of references. He went and he shot all these beautiful references in Milford Sound, which is in New Zealand. So this was a matte painter's dream. You had all these beautiful mountains, different lighting conditions to work with. Because when you're matte painting, if you don't have a photo with the exact lighting reference that matches your plates, you're in a little bit of a world of pain. You're getting rid of lighting, you're relighting photos, you're changing light directions, you're flipping things around, you're pulling things around. But Ridley Scott gave us lots of lighting conditions and angles. So also, if your angle isn't correct, if it's too high, then the perspective isn't right and it's not going to sit in with your shot. If the camera that they shot with is looking a bit lower or down and you don't have those references, also a world of pain, then you're just creating it all from scratch, which you need a group of photos that look very similar. So when you're referencing, you have to find maybe 10 photos that somebody took from the same world that it all kind of looks the same. Otherwise, you're color correcting, you're breaking the images apart, you're really bashing them into fit. So we got lucky on this show. So we had a massive sequence that I was the lead on, and we just got to create such beautiful images. And it was a bit last minute, but it was fantastic.
Now, you also have experience in pre-production. And for those that may not fully understand the visual effects and the matte painting part of the project, you think, well, visual effects is all post-production. That's all after everything is shot. But pre-production is also really important. Talk a little bit about what goes in to the pre-production side from your perspective.
So pre-production is a bit of an anomaly if you're in post. It's a bit of a magical place where all these amazing concepts come through to you and you get them at the beginning of a project, and it is the most exciting thing. And you just look at these fantastic artists and you go, oh my God. And this is what happened on Lion King and Jungle Book, but it doesn't happen on every show. Mm-hmm. So what happened with Night of the Museum was I had already done Maleficent with this one supervisor, and we got a great working relationship. And there wasn't a ton of pre-production that we got through. Now, every once in a while, if a film hasn't had that process happen, where they go through the art department first, create with the director all of your concepts and what your shots are meant to look like, a few stragglers will come through in post and visual effects, and basically they're not worked out yet. A supervisor might come to you and say, hey, can you help me out with this? You know, this wasn't designed. We have a shot at this. Let's present this to director and see what we're going to do just in post. They're not kicking it all the way back to the art department. That guy's gone. Here's us now. So that's what I got to do with my soup on Night at the Museum. And it was more like a planning and more of like a layout design. You know, if we put this character here, what's that going to do to this side of the shot, this and that. So that was a bit of fun. So every once in a while, you'll get that bone thrown at you.
Yeah. Now, your career, you've had the ability to work under with a number of different roles under kind of the visual effects umbrella. Is there a preferred role that you work on? I mean, it sounds like the digital matte painting, but is there any other little details that you really enjoyed?
So for Lion King, I absolutely enjoyed being an environment artist. And I did that because at the time, we had just finished Jungle Book. We won the Oscar. It was fantastic. And then Jon Favreau came back to us and said, I don't want to do live action anymore. We're not doing that. We're doing completely 3D. And so me and the matte painters at MPC, we kind of looked at each other and went, okay, that's us done. So because that was the only show in the house that was coming, it was going to take over the whole studio. Lion King was going to be massive and we needed all hands on deck. And that was the next big thing. And with Jungle Book, I was the matte painter, but we didn't get a ton of work just in matte painting. We got a lot, but it was a lot of 3D, and we were really developing that pipeline at the time. And I kind of shied away from it. But in Lion King, I said, no, I'm doing this. So I had an amazing lead, Luca Bonatti, who's he taught me so much of the pipeline. And he worked with me for about 6 months. I had to learn the whole thing. Of the MPC pipeline. Oh. And everyone knows it takes time, but it was great. And then I was up and running and I was composing my own sets, scattering my own work, and just creating the whole scene in Houdini. And we had a team who each had their own sets and their own little mini environments of the African landscape. And that was blissful. I had 2 years of just creating these incredible sets with incredible tools that the TD teams were writing for us along the way. So that was fantastic.
And you mentioned some of the awards. You mentioned one in there. You have worked on a number of projects that have won some really impressive awards, including the BAFTA Award for visual effects on Poor Things, an Oscar for visual effects on Jungle Book, a VES award for outstanding visual effects in Maleficent, among some others. But talk about the awards. What's your fondest memories of any of these ceremonies?
Well, Maleficent was probably the greatest because well, I shouldn't say greatest, but that was my first project in a proper film house. That was when I was in Vancouver. I had just moved out there and I was just trying to get my hands on as many matte painting jobs as I could. I was so excited, but I couldn't find the bulk work. And Vancouver was where I found it. And the first project was Maleficent. And it was the most incredible because Dylan Cole and Robert Stromberg were working on it. And those were the guys that I've been studying at Noman that I picked up two suitcases and went out to go learn from. And to be on a show with them, I mean, they weren't next to me, but their work kept coming through. And we worked so hard on it, late nights, weekends, everything. And to win the outstanding award for that was incredible. Jungle Book, also amazing time in my life. And Poor Things was kind of an extra bonus. By then I'd won the awards. This is going to sound so, but I won the awards. And then when we got it, you know, everyone was so excited because a lot of it was their first one. And I was just, you know, I was happy for the team. I was happy for it. It kind of lost its luster after a while, because really what it's about is the work you've done, if you're proud of it, the team you worked with,
right?
What you've accomplished, what you've learned, what ground have you broken? If everybody got along and if you felt like you were really a part of it, and with those awards, I did. And so that was special.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. A lot of it is about the experience. The awards are great, but it's the experience and the camaraderie and the team and all of that, to see it all come together is really cool. Amy, I wanted to ask you about another project that we haven't even brought up yet, but I know is really important to you. The Tattooist of Auschwitz. Tell us about that project and why it means so much to you.
We just talked about the films that won awards, and what was special about those was that during the making of them, you knew you were working on something great. That was part of getting the award, where you're part of this ongoing process and this team that you're on, and you're all looking at each other thinking, wow, this is incredible. That's what happened on Tattooist in a different way. When it came into the house, there was a lot of episodic work happening. And when this came through, I was getting ready to go to Miami, but I said to the owners, I have to be on this project. Please put me on as a lead or a soup or something. And that happened. So I spent a year on that project. And that was one of those milestones where you thought, I can't believe visual effects has taken me here to tell this story. My grandmother and my grandparents were survivors. So when this came through, this was very difficult to work on, but probably one of the most important things I've ever done. The team that worked on this, the clients included, were the most sensitive and most professional people I had ever worked with on something like this. I mean, you could really get this wrong. We had to build Birkenau camp. And this was a challenge because we had to spend so much time on websites such as Yad Vashem in Israel, where you're looking through references of real raw material that you had to replicate. And it was difficult. But the clients that we had, Simon and Alan, were absolutely supportive and understood the sensitivity of the work we had to do. They were top researchers as well. They were top movie makers. And we knew what we were making had to be absolutely accurate. That was the other part of it. We were very much in touch with the Auschwitz Museum, and we had to make sure that they were happy with it as well. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure to get everything perfect the way it was. In several stages of the building of that camp, there were construction stages that we had to understand. We had to understand whether there were crematoriums in that year. Were there two? Were there one? Had they built that one yet? What was the state of the camp? Was it clean? Was it chaotic in 1943 or 1945? And then we had to also build the liberation scene, which was happening at the last moment of creating the project, of finishing the project as well. But we knew it had to be done. And so it was all hands on deck for that as well. And I think the team just delivered some spectacular work. So this was a really special project.
Well, and it's one thing to put your heart and soul into something because you're a professional and you want to do the best work. It's another when it truly is personal.
Yes. Yes. It was very hard, especially I had one other person that felt that way on the team, but I had to keep a lot of it in because you don't want to impose that on your team and on your work. You have to keep a lot of it inside to yourself and work it out yourself. They were offering some counseling on the for the actors and the people on set who were creating this film at the time, which was incredible. I didn't go for that, but it was I had a lot of, you know, talks with my mother and, you know, remembering and trying to work through it emotionally. But I just had to keep getting it accurate because that was the way of dealing with it, was to say that this is the story we are telling and we're going to get it right. That was my way through it.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, of all the projects you've worked on as a visual effects artist, is there one that you look back on and say, like, I have no idea how we accomplished that? Like the biggest challenge creatively that you are, you know, can look back on and learn from?
So I'd have to say Maleficent, because the work we got from Dylan Cole were his paintings that we had to reproject. And at the time, Dylan Cole was doing, he was very messy. If you look closely as an image, everything was just perfect, right? Mm-hmm. If you just step back and it all worked. And most of us can't even do that like he can do that. But what we had to do was reproject it, get them into shots. They were like a lot of standalone paintings, and we had to get them into moving shots. And a lot of it was just pain of undoing some of the masks and the color blending and the baked in atmosphere and just blurry brush strokes. And it was painful.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, we're going, oh my God, but it's Dylan Cole stuff, you know? And on the other side, we're going, ah, oh, why did he give us it like this, you know? And then we won the award. So, it, you know, that was a bit special.
Mm-hmm.
Not how you would do it now, because everything is so, you have to pay so much attention to every pixel. Everything has to be sharp everywhere. And that's not how Dylan Cole was at the time, but it was starting to become that way. So that's what they wanted, but it's not what we had to work with. So that was very challenging.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask a question about you talking about, you know, being in New York and then LA and then Toronto and Vancouver. It sounds like you had to go to where the projects were. Do you still have to do that in your field, or can you do a lot more remotely?
Yeah. So yes, I jumped around. They were calling us pixel gypsies at the time, and it was a big movement. I think we know when the tax incentives left America around 2016, and they left LA as well. And everyone started roaming around. You had to go to Vancouver, and then it became Montreal. So I went there, and then it became London, and London was competing as well. That was where I wanted to go. That was the main headquarters where I knew that I was going to get the best work. I remember Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. That was what I was after. I was after learning from those people, learning from Europe. And that was one of the best things I ever did. And then I wound up staying 10 years because that was where all the work was that I loved. I'm not saying it's the best work. There was incredible work going on in so many other places of the world, but Europe was where I wanted to be. And I think now, obviously, since COVID, we all know that you can start to do things remotely, but a lot of people are still asking you to be in the city of the tax incentive. So we're here in Miami and we are in Florida, and we know how hard it is without the tax incentive. So I'm still having to do remote work. That isn't ideal, because the best part about visual effects is working as a team and being with everybody, being with your friends, talking art all day long, going into dailies, having meetings with people, your buddies, having coffee, and, you know, just sharing all these experiences, watching the YouTube videos of the latest trailer and this and that. I mean, this is all what we love. And I think with remote, you're not really doing that anymore, but we're finding our way, I think.
Yeah. And now, I mean, can you watch a film and actually enjoy it? Or are you always looking at those little details and getting lost in your job?
It depends. I don't generally go to the big visual effects films. I don't know. It's not that interesting to me anymore. I like stories now.
Mm-hmm.
I think now I'm less interested in shots and the actual work. I'm more interested in, you know, supervising and more team building and things like that. So I've kind of stopped looking at things like that when I used to, when I was really studying visual effects and building up my career and learning my ways, because I, you know, I just wanted to learn and be the best I could be. But now I've kind of calmed down. Yeah, I can watch, and I like, you know, stories. But obviously, when it sticks out, you're going, "Oh, who did this?"
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that that's one of the things, is that if you don't notice the visual effects, then that means they're done well.
Yeah.
You know, if you're starting to notice things, then you start questioning, and then you do get lost in that instead of the story, which is obviously the issue. Now, in addition to all of this that you're continuing to do, I want to make sure, you know, people don't think like you're done with this, but in addition to what your visual effects work, your current venture, new venture, is that you're the owner and CEO of New Wave Color, which obviously is based in Miami, where you are, which provides custom color analysis for people. Tell us more about the company and what you're doing.
Yeah, so this started as a side gig in London, and I got really interested in it. When you put one color up against another color, it looks one way. And when you put that same color up against a completely different color, it changes. Mm-hmm. That's the basics of art, in a way, with painting. You know, when you make certain colors pop, you put a certain one next to another one, or when you want to calm them down, or you want to make them look cooler and things like this. So this applies to people as well. And I started noticing what it does when you wear the colors that match your skin tone and match your hair and eye color. And I found it really empowering. And I noticed it when I was going into work, that people noticed me more when I was wearing the color that suited me and it was harmonious to myself. And I found it also important that people trusted me when I was talking about art, because I was wearing it. Mm-hmm. It seems a bit hokey, but it actually works. I then tried to do this as a team building exercise within my company at the time. And I found it interesting because I got a group of people, producers and artists, who generally have a bit of friction during the day. They're either very close or they're fighting about something. Mm-hmm. And I got them together on a lunch break, and I did this color analysis for a lot of the women, and we bonded. Everyone bonded, and it became a tool of getting people together. It also helps women to empower themselves, and men, when they walk into a meeting or they walk into a session, a daily special, since especially in our industry, where you're noticed, boom, someone's looking at you and someone's listening to you. And that goes for production, people trying to become a line producer or an executive producer or a supervisor. You know, if you're a woman and you're trying to become a supervisor, let's face it, it's a bit difficult. Mm-hmm. So if you're wearing things that make you stand out and look harmonious to you, you're being paid attention to. So that's what I kind of wanted to start bringing to people. And I just have a really good time with it. So that's what I'm doing.
So it's kind of the modern version of saying, you know, first impressions matter.
Yeah.
In this, it's a lot of that, but it's understanding the why behind what somebody thinks of when they first see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Using color theory, using color psychology, and using color analyzing. I have 48 different colors that I put up to people, and I see the nuances that's happening to them when they wear each one. So I'm using that kind of expertise to help.
You talked about a little bit from our industry perspective, but just in general, why is this important for people to know their colors?
It creates a certain glow about you, and it creates a certain psychological harmony that's happening when you're out and about in your day. It helps you with choices. So what you get is a color swatch book of your palette, which is so strange. And every color within that palette works with each other. So nothing is clashing or really standing out in a disingenuous way. So you can take that palette with you and you can use it to organize yourself, you know, your makeup, your hair, your clothing, whatever. And it's an investment. You're not buying things that aren't going to work for you. Right. So, yeah.
And getting interested in this kind of, I mean, I'll call it a science because it sounds like it certainly is. Did you purposely get involved in this, or was this kind of an accidental thing that you realized is important and wanted to kind of take it to the next level?
It was accidental. It was kind of just a fun thing that I was trying out. And when I got it done myself in London, I thought, oh my God, this is so much fun. You know, I could do this on the weekends, on the sides. I do it to my friends. I did it to my sister. She loves it. And everyone's just having fun. And I found that with visual effects, I wasn't talking to enough people. Mm-hmm. I was always on my computer, just kind of with my head down, needing to do what I needed to do. And this got me out. This got me really just having a good time. And I thought, I'll make it a business for now, you know, just see what can come of it. And I'm meeting all sorts of really wonderful people that are interested and traveling.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun and it sounds really cool. So that's fun. Tell people where they can learn more about your new venture, as well as any other of your work or your credits or anything like that. Tell us where we can find more about Amy.
So I'm on LinkedIn. I have my profile on LinkedIn, but I also have newwavecolor.com. And I'm starting to put together a lot of my work, visual effects, paintings, and color analysis on this one website, just to see where I go with it. Eventually, I might want to do paintings for people again, because that's what I started out doing. I really enjoyed that, you know, home decor paintings. But also, I'm looking into working with people who are using visual effects and creating the new pipeline, including Unreal. So I'm talking to a lot of folks who want to, especially here in Florida, who want to kind of break the mold of the lengthy pipeline that I feel is starting to go away. I sense that directors and supervisors are really wanting to trim the fat, given the budgets. People are afraid to spend money. The big studios aren't wanting to spend so much money anymore. I see a consolidation happening, and I see it available through Unreal. And I'm starting to talk a lot with people who are building that pipeline. So that's where I want to go. I'm trying to build it so that we are more on the pre-production side with an in-house post visual effects inside that. So then we can kind of do all of it in one go. That's where I'd like to go with it. So I'm going to be a bit busy trying to build these things, trying to build New Wave Color, and trying to also work with Unreal pipelines. But that's where I'm at.
Excellent. Well, Amy, thanks for spending time with us today to share your story and share your expertise. And we obviously appreciate you being a Film Florida member as well. So thanks for being on the Film Florida podcast.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here. Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to the Film Florida podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org. And like or follow our social media pages. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.24 for our 2024 fundraising campaign. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at filmflorida.creator-spring.com. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.